Welcome to Indonesia dan Lain-Lain,
the podcast about everything you need to know about Indonesia.
I'm Hayat Indriyatno. I'm an editor at Bongo Bay, the environmental news website, and previously with the Jakarta Post and the Jakarta Globe.
And I'm Erin Cook, and I used to work with you at Jakarta Globe, and now I'm doing my own thing with Darren Mulut Kemulut.
You're doing an awful lot of things. Go on, tell us all about it.
And Indonesia Intelligencer with coconuts.
Go on.
And soon to be something very special with Splice Newsroom.
Awesome.
But most importantly, Indonesia Done Line Line.
Okay.
All right. We've got a bit of a bummer one today, I think.
Yeah. So today is Wednesday the 13th.
Yes.
Of November. And so...
it's been a big day here.
Or specifically in Medan. So early this morning, there was a suicide bombing at the Medan City Police Headquarters.
Yeah, it was thankfully not too much of a casualty list. So the suicide bomber died.
Right, the suicide bomber dies, as you know, as is the nature of the job. And six people were injured. I believe the toll was two civilians and four police officers.
Yes.
And it took place during the morning assembly of the police officers. Every morning they have an assembly.
Yeah, right. So it was kind of a busy, busy moment to hit.
I'm not sure that we know the identity of the perpetrator at this point. The police haven't said anything.
I think the police said he's a 24-year-old student, but they have not confirmed who he's affiliated with or his motives.
Okay,
which I think is probably the more long-term interesting part there.
Right, and so it seems like he took advantage of there's right now, there's a lot of people going to police stations because the government has opened the registration for civil servants.
Yeah, this was quite confusing to me to read about this. The
SKCK. So that's basically a letter of good conduct. So if you want to apply to be a civil servant, you have
just police check sort of.
Yeah, yeah. So you do apply for this. And apparently what happened is the police had just opened the registration period. And I believe he took advantage. He went there, and witnesses said he was asking about the, you know, where do I go to do the SK checkup?
Gosh, where most people are.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And so, yeah, it seems that this wasn't some off-the-cuff thing. He obviously planned it.
Yeah. It's been kind of a long day trying to work out who he is and whether he himself is a victim. There was a bit of talk that he's wearing an Odge Old jacket, so maybe he'd been asked to deliver something and it inadvertently delivered a bomb.
Yeah, and so that's actually been a bit of an issue. So we've got representatives for drivers of these online platforms.
These are quite powerful groups.
Yeah, and they're because they have huge constituencies, and they're like this is going to give us a bad name. Now people are going to be suspicious of anyone, a stranger who rocks up in a green jacket now.
Well, that's it. Like, how many times have you been literally anywhere in the country for years now and not,
thought
anything of it?
Yeah, so they're ubiquitous. And if this is a tactic that's going to...
Well, that worries me because it clearly worked.
It worked, exactly, right. Because, I mean... they're everywhere, and to the point that you don't notice them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so if you're going to carry out a suicide bombing, that's ubiquity is sort of
that's especially friend. After the last couple of years of last couple of days of hand-wringing over women wearing niqab, which is the full covering.
Right, after the Surabaya church bombings, right? Yeah. Because one of the perpetrators was wearing a full niqab.
And you certainly notice that around Jakarta a lot more than, or around the country a lot more than a bloke in a green jacket.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I don't know, that'll keep developing over the next few years.
Yeah, we'll see how it turns out. Like we mentioned, just six injuries, but at this point they're not considered to be serious.
Yeah, from what I was seeing, I watched the press conference this morning and they didn't seem like they were too concerned about these poor guys that got caught up in the fray.
Right, yeah. So, but again, developing, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and there's been quite a few raids up that end of the country, so... Yep. Expect that to continue. What do you think about this, though? I've noticed the law enforcement has seemed quite defensive today, as though people have been highly critical. Do you think there is much room for they aren't doing enough to stand this stuff out?
You know what? I think it's them being embarrassed that they were caught off guard like this.
Yeah,
because attacks on police stations by terrorist groups, they're actually more common than you'd think over here.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
They do happen, yeah,
especially
exactly.
Especially in Sumatra, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Sumatra and Java as well to an extent. And so, you know, that another one happened and that there was a suicide bombing. You know, they obviously they're not happy about it and questions are going to be raised about, how the security response lapsed that led to this.
Ooh, it's going to be a big few days for Densus 88, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yikes. All right. Well, that's one to watch. Yeah. What else have we got? Oh, God.
Okay.
We've just got a list and it's all bad stuff. So let's just go on to the next.
So, yeah, still on one. The theme of Ojol and specifically Grab.
Poor Grab. They're having a very bad day.
Yeah. So you in particular have beef with
oh, my God. These Grab wheels.
Yeah.
It does my head in. So they're the, what do we call them?
Electric scooters, right?
Scooters. But yeah, I don't know. To me, scooter is, you know, a scoopy.
Right,
so this is like, I don't know, razor scooters style. So they've been popping up all over the city for the last few weeks, months even.
Yeah.
Not liked them for a long time because I think they're super, super dangerous. They're good fun, but there's no monitoring about who uses them.
Yeah, exactly.
And what they do with them.
I don't see any utility for them here. I know they're huge in Singapore because the people use them for delivering food and stuff, right?
Well, Singapore's got their own thing going on. Right. They banned them the other day.
Yeah, so they banned them off pedestrian footpaths and for good reason. But, you know, in Singapore, it makes sense that you'd have this because distances are so short and it's impractical to use a motorbike.
Yeah, absolutely.
But over here, it's the complete opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah. So well, who's it serving?
I don't know. A bank of them next to my place and it does my head in because it's just like kids. It's kids after school, which is totally reasonable and fine.
It's not only reasonable, but don't go in the middle of the road.
Don't go in the middle of the road, which is what has happened today. So at Sedirman in FX.
Okay.
Oh, it was on Sunday over the weekend.
That would be a car free day event, no?
Ooh, depends on what time. Maybe we'll have to do a quick
because I'm not sure if it was if it was the car free day event that makes sense because the city transportation agency today they said you know we're not gonna allow them on a car free day.
Oh, they singled out car free day.
Yeah,
so it's two young guys we're sharing one I think and we're hit by a car.
All right. Okay. So no, we stand corrected. Our Filipina editor. producer Cristobal has told us it was actually in the very early hours of the morning, 1 a.m.
Oh, God. So there's definitely lots of cars around still. But I don't know. It stresses me out. There's just no, like with Grab Bike and Gojek, it's a service that serves a purpose and it's monitored and it's regulated. With these Grab wheels,
these vehicles are licensed and registered.
Exactly.
Whereas these Grab things are not.
Yeah, there's full on children cruising about Ben Hill on them. And I don't know what you're going to do about it because you've already got two deaths.
The city, you know, transportation agency, they say they're going to regulate them.
Good.
And they actually blame them for, you know, these Grab wheel users for damaging the pedestrian overpasses.
Yeah, so these are the new ones along Sedirman that were put up just before the Asian Games, right? So these are genuinely beautiful pedestrian overpasses with really nice treated wood. So they've just been scratching it all up.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, obviously people are not happy. And we all know that, you know, our blessed governor, he wants these pedestrian overpasses to be kept as beautiful as possible.
Yes.
Because, of course, Instagram selfie.
Hashtag Jakarta.
Yeah. Yep.
But I'm also a bit worried that, like, now that it's just this frantic, oh, we've got to do something, and they'll just throw everything at the wall and, I don't know, who knows what's going to work?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And you know,
I did my first shouting at kids.
You did? Really? You're that old now.
I was that person.
Okay.
But I don't know. I felt like it was a moment because I shouted awas at the same time as my Gojek driver shouted it. I was like, ooh, I've made it. But yeah, two kids just on one of these Grab wheels just hooning down street in Ben Hill, middle of the night. I was like, it's so dangerous.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I'm becoming a mum. I'm a boomer.
Okay. all right. So, you know, pedestrian overpasses, another thing, right? And this is entirely on Anis. There's a pedestrian overpass on Sedirman between basically the Indo Food building and the Astra building, the new Astra building.
Ah, yeah.
Right. It used to have a roof.
Oh, my God. You've triggered me.
And so now Anis apparently cut off the roof on the pretext that it's going to be good for the view and you can have.
And it's not wrong. It is a beautiful view, except it's November in Indonesia. Like, why would you take off the roof the month wet season begins.
Right, exactly. So right now we're in that transition period where it's hotter than bad breath and the rains are going to be heavy. And, you know, when this was brought to his attention, obviously he had something smart to say on this. And what he said was, well, you know, the pedestrian bridge is for moving from one hot place to another hot place or one rainy place to another rainy place. So why should you get shelter in the middle? So I'm paraphrasing, but this is essentially what he said.
Galaxy brain shit.
Right, exactly. You know, Professor Anis, right? He is a professor. So, you know, I'll give him that much.
Yes, he's technically a professor.
Yes, yeah. That's terrible. If all you're going to do for is just for the view.
Yeah. It's really weird. And I've seen a few photos from it from, you know, big influencers and that. And it does look cool, but
it looks hot as shit.
Yeah. You've got thousands of people trying to get from A to B. Oh, God. This is just turning into a bashing a Nice festival. I can feel it. It's coming.
It's coming. But you know what? There's another thing that's going on in the city that we can't entirely blame Anis for. Okay. So I got to give props to the guy. He's doing the sidewalks really good. Okay.
Oh, in a lot of places. No. And I'm so glad that he's sorting out Professor Jalan Satrio as well.
Right.
Oh, once that's done.
It's because that place is a hellhole.
It's been a nightmare.
It's like, you know, Trump calls it a shithole, right? So anyway, he's one of the areas that he's doing is Cicchini. And if you know anything about Cicchini, which is, you know, Menteng adjacent.
Yeah. Great pub up there.
Beautiful, beautiful old trees along that side. So they got Pohonbringin. I don't know how you call Pohonbringin in English. They got Angsana trees. Angsana is, there are these massive, beautiful, old, they're very elegant rosewoods. They're species of rosewood trees. And they're native to Southeast Asia. And Christabel here, you can back me up. They're actually the national tree of the Philippines, am I right? and so...
I hope this picks us up a lot of listeners from the Philippines.
Yeah. Yeah, salamat. What's happening is, you know, obviously he's revitalizing the sidewalks, he's expanding them, but in the process, cutting down a lot of these trees.
So we're losing a lot of...
Yeah, we're losing a lot of these trees. They've been around for decades. You know, these trees take ages to grow and to mature, and then they provide shade and they're great. And so we're losing these trees and... Obviously, the city parks department they're saying, yeah, we will put up new trees. Now, the question is, what trees? And some city councilwoman from the PDIP, of all people, of course, has suggested that they put up date palms.
Ooh.
The palm trees that come from the desert, that, you know, that give you dates. So instead of, you know, having these beautiful, you know...
That makes sense for where we are.
Trees from Southeast Asia that... You know, they're so special that they're, you know, a national tree in some countries. Mm. Instead of that, we're going to get date palms from the desert?
Yes.
Come on now.
That doesn't seem like they're going to thrive in.
Right.
Ugh. They're going to get destroyed.
Yeah. Well, I hope they do. And then they feel bad. Sense to put back the rosewoods, you know, because these are beautiful trees. Rosewoods, ebonies, there's a reason they're so prized.
Yeah. I'm going to go check them out. I don't think I've ever noticed.
Yeah. If you, you know, look it up. It's called Angsana. In Indonesian, I think the genus is Pterocarpus or something like that. But yeah, but do look it up.
You've become such a greenie. I'm impressed. It's genus.
MongoBay.com. Yeah. So that's my thing. So please, you know, if anyone in the city council or the, you know, Jakarta administration is listening, let's have native trees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bummer. Oh, no. Now we get into some real...
Yeah, so...
Real genuinely devastating.
Yeah, so we like to be, you know, glib over here, but, you know, serious things do happen.
Mm.
And they happen a little too frequently. And October was a particularly bad month for environmental defenders.
Yeah.
Okay. So most recently, on October 29th, two former journalists and community activists were killed in a palm oil plantation in North Sumatra, and they were killed in a pretty gruesome manner. They were hacked to death. One of them, I believe, had his left arm hacked off, and their body was just dumped there in the plantation. Yeah,
extraordinarily violent. I found that very jarring.
And so that occurred on October 29th. Their bodies were found like the next day.
Yeah.
And since then, this past week, the police have actually arrested 5 people. 4 of them were believed to be the hitmen, and one of them was the is alleged to be the plantation owner, the owner of this particular plantation.
Yes. So he, from what I understand, he paid off the hitmen about $3,000 USD.
Yeah, so something like 41 million, something like that. Yeah, he promised them that. And there was like 7 hitmen, I believe. 3 of them are on the loose. They're still on the run, and 4 of them are in custody. And so, okay, the background to this is that the plantation in question has been declared illegal because they cleared 750 hectares of forest, which they're not allowed to do.
Yeah.
It's completely prohibited for all oil palm plantations. And so in 2018, the government actually deemed it an illegal plantation, and they sealed it off. And so the victims in this particular case, they had reported on this story. And what complicates matters is that they were also part of the community group that was in a dispute over ownership of this land.
Right. So they were hyper-involved as well as covering it.
Yeah. So not journalists in the Western sense that they're detached from the story, but they were actually involved in this. And so
is that a common thing for environmental journalists?
Yeah, it is pretty common. Yeah. Because, these are people that they're concerned about issues in their community. And a lot of times they do have a stake in what goes on.
Yep.
And so, so that's what complicates the story a little bit. At the time of their death, they were not journalists. They were former journalists.
Right. So they were working as strictly as
community. Yeah. So and so what precipitated this apparently, and this is according to the media reports, is that there had been a ruling that the plantation was legal, obviously, last year, and these guys were trying to claim the harvest of the fruits, of the palm fruits.
Yeah.
And their justification was that, the community has just as much right to this palm fruit as the company, because obviously the company has been declared operating illegally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, violence, in connection with palm oil, that's pretty common. It's sad, but it's so common that a lot of times it just goes unreported.
Well, that's it. I was struck that it's taken a while for this to become a national story.
Right.
I don't think it got onto my radar, at least until the last couple of weeks.
Right.
Even though their bodies were discovered at the end of October.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Just because it is so ultra common?
It is incredibly common. There's like hundreds at one point in time, there's hundreds of disputes going on between palm oil companies and local communities.
Yep.
Just because the sector is just so opaque in terms of land ownership and that sort of thing. And so you do get, incidents of violence. And a lot of times it's the companies co-opting the police and other security forces to carry out their bidding. And
that's what I was just going to ask. Is there, it has taken a while, but the police are taking this seriously
now. Yes, they are taking this seriously,
Is this a sign of change, a bit, I don't know, the end of impunity for these guys, or is it the public backlash has been so huge?
I think the public backlash, and plus the fact that these guys are relatively high profile and that they were former journalists, and so it is getting a lot of traction in the Western media as an attack on journalists, whereas like I say, the case is a little bit more complicated than that. So it is getting traction in that regard, but again, these things are just so common that I hate to say it, but this is just the latest in a long line of such incidents.
That's really scary. I can't get over how violent it was. I don't know. I suppose it's like one thing to execute, and it's another thing to be so horrifically violent.
Right. But you got to understand, that's the nature of this industry. And just if you want to look at an example of just how violent they can be, palm oil plantations, they often have an issue with orangutans.
Yeah.
Because orangutans are seen as pests. They invade the plantations and then they steal the fruit. They eat the fruit. And so a lot of times what happens is orangutans turn up dead. And they're not just dead.
Yep.
Okay. They've been chopped. They've been decapitated. They've been you know, shot with pellet guns like 70 times, 100 times.
Oh, yes, I remember this. That happened so frequently. It's a similar story earlier in the year, I think.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And no, these things, they just, and for, you know, orangutan, in the case of orangutans, there's never been any prosecutions. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully in this case, there will be a prosecution, there will be some justice done. But again, just so common that it barely goes reported.
Oh, God, it's devastating stuff.
Yeah. And so, yeah, and their deaths, you know, they were killed on October 29th, earlier in the month, at the start of the month. We had another death of an environmental defender.
Yeah, so this one's interesting. Gottfried
Siregar. He was a lawyer for WALHI. WALHI is the Indonesian Forum for the Environment.
Yeah.
It's basically the Indonesian branch of Friends of the Earth.
Yeah.
So it's the biggest environmental NGO here. And
because it seemed like it was orchestrated to look like it was just a random little...
Right. So the official story is that he was found dead on an overpass, a traffic overpass in Medan, again, in North Sumatra. A traffic overpass next to his bike, and the police ruled that he had crashed his bike because he was drunk driving.
Yeah.
And all the evidence actually suggests otherwise. His family and his friends said he never drank. He was not a drinker. And they actually point to evidence that shows that it appears he was beaten brutally in some other place, and then his body and his bike were dumped on that overpass to make it look like an accident. And Gottfried, he was perhaps best known for advocating for communities that were involved in palm oil disputes, like
this, right. So it's like coming back to palm again.
Case. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And but because while he covers a lot more issues, the most recent case that he was working on at the time he was killed was he was investigating a forged signature for a dam. So there's a dam project going on in North Sumatra. Yep. It's happening inside an orangutan habitat.
Oh, I think you talked about this last season.
So it's the Batang Toru Dam. Yeah. And in order for that construction to proceed, the developers needed an environmental permit. Yep. And they forged, they apparently forged the signature of an expert who, and for this report, for their report that essentially said, no, there's not going to be any harm to the wildlife.
Oh, gosh.
And so they forged a signature. The expert whose signature was forged said, no, I didn't say that in my report.
Yeah, yeah.
I pointed out that there would be an impact. And Gottfried was one of the people from the WALHI team that was actually bringing this up to the Sumatra police, Sumatra police, and asking them, why don't you look into this allegation of signature forgery? Because that is a crime, signature forgery. And the police actually dismissed that case. And so Gottfried at that time was actually, he brought the case to the attention of internal affairs at the National Police in Jakarta.
Oh, so he really escalated it.
Yeah, he totally escalated it. So basically he's asking the police in Jakarta, the National Police, look, you guys up in North Sumatra are refusing to look into this case, even though the evidence is clear cut.
Yep.
And next thing you know,
oh God,
you know, he's found dead. Yep. So, you know, I'm not drawing any conclusions from that, make of it what you will, but this was an environmental defender who was working on a pretty big issue, and, you know, no more.
I know that. All right, so you've done the Munga Bay shout out, but I'll just do it again because this is not my round at all. But there's a piece that you guys published recently that you can find on the website. Palm owner charged with ordering murder of two journalists in Indonesia.
Right,
is the headline. If you want to learn a bit more, I definitely recommend that. It's been the most handy thing that I've seen out of these horrible stories.
Right. So,
I feel like there's probably more interest in this than there would ordinarily. Is that that we've had two cases very, very close together?
Yeah. Again. So Gottfried's case was pretty high profile because the dam project that he was, you know, working against is a pretty high profile one. It's one of the Chinese funded ones.
Oh, right.
And,
yep.
And obviously the main focus has been on it's going to destroy the habitats of these orangutans. Orangutans of population of only 800, that live nowhere else on Earth.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are not like Sumatran orangutans or Bornean orangutans. They're their own species, Tapa Nui orangutans. They were only discovered in 2017 as a new species.
Yeah.
And they're found nowhere else except the Batang Toru area. And the dam is going up there with Chinese funding. So there have been like routine protests at Bank of China and the other people who are funding it. And it's still going ahead. And so,
do you think these two incidents will, I think Palm's probably a harder one because there already is so much attention on the sector.
Yeah.
Is this going to reignite a bit of a pushback against these projects, do you think? Or is this going to be business as usual?
No, I don't think so. I think for a lot of people who, you know, following the issue, they'll forget that Goldfried was working on the Batang Toru thing because he's better known as advocate against palm oil.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it's become a palm thing.
Yeah. So for the, if I were the Batang Toru developers right now, I'd be sort of relieved because there's not so much.
Right. So it hasn't been like clearly distinctly linked.
Yeah. So the link is not there, even though it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
It's not that visible. For palm oil, you know, they're constantly operating under a shadow because just, you know, come on, palm oil, right?
Well, I just feel like every year there's big talk about it when haze is happening. And then as soon as haze stops,
right,
we don't talk about palm for another year.
Yeah, until something like this happens, right?
Yeah,
yeah. And so, yeah, you know, it's going to go on. I mean, there's supposed to be a moratorium on palm oil, but that's only for new licenses, for new concessions.
And would that have stopped something like what these two were fighting against? I don't think we've said their names. Maridan and Matua?
No, it would not have because it's an existing concession and it had already been deemed illegal anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, it would not... no moratorium or other policy that's in place right now would have stopped.
Right, so it's certainly not far-reaching enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
So and part of the moratorium was actually the government was required to review existing permits.
Yeah.
It's not done so. So it's not actually closed any plantations on the basis of any reviews carried out as part of that moratorium. So it's sort of a toothless moratorium at this point.
Yeah. Right, so this is one of those things that the government can take to ASEAN and say, look what we're doing.
Yeah, it was in ASEAN or the EU, which is their number two palm oil market.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, it's, It's really about the optics rather than the substance. So.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think that's fairly reasonable thing to say. Okay, well, that's hideously depressing.
Yeah.
I hope, I don't know, I'm kind of buoyed to see that we've got a bit of police movement, at least in the case of Maridan and Matua.
Yeah, but you got to remember that in the Goldfried case, they've ruled that it's a drunk driving accident and they're not going to do anything about that. So, but we will see because, you know, there was that complaint filed by Goldfried with the internal affairs. So we will see if anything comes
from that. See what comes from that. Yeah. Okay, so that's definitely one that's going to keep popping back up.
Yes, for sure.
All right, we'll keep an eye on it.
I think it's high profile enough that, you know, even the Western media has got their eye on this.
Yeah, yeah. It's a bit of a slow burn, but I think both of these stories are becoming I don't know, something to go at least regional, if not fully.
For sure.
All right. Do we have any good news?
Yeah, we do have good news, actually. And it also comes from Sumatra. I think our focus has been on Sumatra the whole episode, right?
Well, a bit of Jakarta slang and a bit of... All right, good. Okay. Well, this is good. So, horrible news about orangutans, but good news
Good news about rhinos, but it's sort of a mixed bag. So, our friend of the podcast and sometime host, Bastin Gokon.
Bastin.
Yeah, Bastin, peace be upon him. he recently went up to Sumatra to check out the SRS, the Sumatran Rhino Sanctuary.
Oh, yeah.
And so, what it is it's basically a... Yeah, sanctuary where they hold captive rhinos, Sumatran rhinos, and they breed them. Because these things are so rare, there's like 30 to 80 believed to be left anywhere in the world. And, you know, just to give you a sense of proportion, we have 34 government ministers, right? So there's, you know, potentially more government ministers than there are Sumatran rhinos.
That is amazing when you put it like that.
Right. And so, you know, it gives you something to think about. And so because they're so rare and their habitats are so fragmented and being lost, for them to breed in the wild is like increasingly difficult.
Yep.
And so, unlike African rhinos, the biggest threat they face is poaching for their horns, right? Indonesian rhinos, not so much, not because, you know, their horns are smaller, but it's the habitat loss and the fact that they're such, and they're having such difficulty breeding, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's so much, there's so few enough. Of them. There's so few of them, and they're, how do you find your mate when the forest has been fragmented, right?
Start my life.
Yeah. Okay. And so they're trying to captive breeding them in SRS. And so right now they've managed to have two calves,
yep.
And which is, you know, a great success. And these were, they were.
Can I ask a dumb question? Is mm-hmm. this like, when you got big old animals like right. this, is this similar where it's like, it's super hard to do and you're only going to get one or two babies a year, if that, out of dozens of.
Yeah, something like that. But it also, the females have to be ovulating at the right time.
Yep.
And they can only ovulate in the presence of a male, which is why in the wild it's so difficult, because yeah, they rarely run into each other. And so with the program here at the SRS, they've already got two calves, and they were from natural mating. So
yeah,
basically the male mounted the female. So now what they're trying to do to step up the procedure is try IVF, in vitro fertilization.
Yeah.
So they want to take an egg from a female, inseminate it with sperm from a male in a lab, and then once it gets fertilized, they'll put it into a surrogate female.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And so this has never worked before on a Sumatran rhino, which is the downer part of it. And so like last month, they tried it in Malaysia. Malaysia's got just one rhino left.
Like at all, like in the wild or?
Ever, anywhere. So they've got one rhino of female, and she's quite old, and she's kept in captivity. And so they tried IVF. They took one of her eggs and the frozen semen that they'd taken from one of the males who's now dead.
Yeah.
And they didn't get anything because the sperm was low quality. And the thing is, Malaysia has been really keen to try IVF with rhinos, but they need the sperm and other genetic eggs from Indonesia. So
yeah,
Indonesia does not want to share that genetic material.
That's really sad. What's that about? Is that just a weird nationalism thing?
It is a nationalism thing. Yes, yeah. Yes. And so, you know, the people in Malaysia, it was an international group of scientists.
Mm.
They're like, you know, come on now, Indonesia, you could share some sperm with us.
For the good of humanity. Right.
And so Cristobal's giving me a look right now. I'm not sure what that means. So now the Indonesians are going to try it, but they're going to try it with a female who's been kept in Kalimantan.
Okay.
So this is where it gets a bit complicated. So I mentioned the SRS in Sumatra.
Mm-hmm.
There's also an SRS in Kalimantan,
mm-hmm.
But there's only one rhino there, one female. And so they're going to take an egg from her and they're going to try and fertilize it and then put it into one of the females in Sumatra.
Oh, gosh.
And why this is such great news is Sumatran rhinos occur in both Sumatra and Kalimantan, Borneo, right? And because they've been separated for like hundreds of millions of years, their DNA is rather distinct. And so what they're hoping is that by mixing like an egg from Kalimantan with sperm from Sumatra, you'll get a wider gene pool. So it prevents inbreeding. Because
As the population dwindles, that must become a bigger and bigger problem.
Right. Yeah. So just diversifying the gene pool.
I'm so dumb. I thought it was going to be like a Liger situation or something. No, okay, I get it. Yeah.
And so, and really, that's the justification for the Malaysian side as well.
Totally.
Because
that makes
because
sense.
Their rhinos are the Kalimantan, the Bornean type. So you mix the gene pools. It is still essentially the Sumatran rhino. You're just having greater diversity of the gene pool, and you ensure that the species, you know, lives on a little bit longer.
Oh, aren't people so smart? That's amazing.
Yeah, and so that's the Indonesian government has said they're going to try IVF, and yeah, we'll see. So hopefully it works.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have some good news.
Yeah,
in the next few months. Yeah. When will we know?
No idea. It takes like months. Their gestation period is like a year or something.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it's quite long because they're huge animals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rhinos freak me out, to be honest. Like, just being very blunt, they scare me.
Do they?
But I want to see more babies. That's cute.
Yeah.
Oh, God. All right.
So, yeah, thanks to Bastin for, you know, checking out the sperm.
All right. So, I think that's almost everything for today. Wait. I'm really into our villains and heroes thing that we did last time.
Okay, let's do that.
All right. Who is your pick for villain?
I think it's a no-brainer. I think it's everyone's pick for villain. Rizik Shihab, the WhatsApp Wahhabi. So
I feel like we could just chuck him as villain most, most of the time.
Yeah, the exile of Jeddah. God, I could go on.
Yeah, what's he up to? Because he's always popping back up and it's always some nonsense. But what is it this time?
It's ridiculous. So anyway, he recently released a video where he held up a sheet of paper that he claimed was an order from the Indonesian government barring him from re-entering the country.
Which is very weird.
Which is very weird because the Indonesian government says, we don't know shit about that.
Oh, so it's extra weird. Yeah. Right. Well, because the government said repeatedly, come back.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want.
But exactly. And besides, they have, you know, pretty much scrubbed the case against him, about the porn case against him. And so he has no reason to not return.
What's that? Is he just trying to pick a fight with...
He's trying to play the victim here, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to try and make it look like he's continuously being persecuted.
Exiled hero,
And so...
Oh, God.
Yeah, so a no-brainer. That's the villain for me.
Yeah. Well... This works out really nicely because my hero is Ahok.
Oh, is he? What's he up to?
I think he's coming back.
Is he?
In one form or another. He is going to be, they haven't announced which yet, but we'll be heading up one of the state-owned enterprises.
One of the BOMN.
Yeah, so there's a couple of the big ones at the moment that are sans leadership, including Garuda, which I know gets on your nerves.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little list. What else could he be? Pertamina, PLN, which would be...
PLN would be good.
Because he's not corrupt, so that's a great idea. Great
start.
Yeah,
but then the problem with PLN is all the directors tend to end up being arrested for something or other.
Well, wouldn't be his first time. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm really excited about it. This Jakarta Post had a great story, kind of just looking at what his options are.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a quote from Bambang Padijaya from Golkar. I don't know who he is, but...
House member?
Yeah. It just says lawmaker. That
House member.
And he says, right after this announcement, we need Ahok's character and his leadership style to fix the performance of some SOEs. We think we need someone special to do it. No one said anything that nice about Ahok.
Yeah, that's a pretty generous thing to say about Ahok.
So I think that's a good sign that he's very much welcome back into the...
So not so toxic anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, I think it's exciting.
Well, good on him. If he does make a comeback. So.
Come back and fix Garuda, please.
Or PLN, you know, let there be light.
It's going to be so many pun headlines. Yeah. If he's PLN, that better be it. Well, I don't know. They don't say when we'll know, but it should be in the next couple of weeks, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
He says he's going to start next month, but he doesn't know where, which seems like a... Okay. Backwards way of doing things.
So this is quite interesting, actually, because, you know, obviously the SOE minister is Eric Toyer, business guy. So if anyone understands how to run a business, it'd be him.
Yeah, yeah.
So if he's looking at Ahok, then obviously he's got a good reason to do so.
Yeah, and I think Ahok very quietly was getting very close with the Jokowi campaign team. So I'm not...
Right.
I'm surprised to see him doing this specifically, but not surprised to see Eric Toyer support him in something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's exciting.
So this is good, yeah. So I'll be glad to see Ahok actually come back to public life. I think the guy's got a lot to offer.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Hopefully we'll have some update on that next week.
Okay, cool.
It's a very depressing one this week, isn't it?
Yeah, but we try to end it on a high, so...
Yeah. Rhino semen. It's always a high note.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll have updates next week. I think most of what we've looked at is kind of developing at the moment. All right. So I'll see you next week then.
All right. Cheers.
Da-da.
Da.
Indonesia Dan Line is a production of Gentle Media.
Our producers are Lisa Siregar, Christabel Pilar, and Budi Dharmawan.
Our editor is Satria Utomo. Da-da.
Sampai jumpa.